I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Chrissy Parrott. Welcome, Chrissy.
Hello, how are you?
Very well.
Yeah.
And here we are sitting in Fremantle looking at the port.
Mm.
Inspires all sorts of things, this port.
Certainly does, certainly does. Well, I arrived at this port when I was 10 years old.
Oh, did you?
And thus begins the history of this production, really.
Ah.
Mm.
So, well, you arrived
I'll
here.
I'll hold that thought.
You arrived here at that tender age, but you're well and truly fully Australianised.
Mm.
So much so that I must tell our listeners straight off, in case they don't realise it, that earlier this year you were made an officer in the General Division of the Order of Australia.
An AO.
An AO, which people know it much better by, which is a very distinguished award.
Mm-hmm.
And reading from the notes that accompanied the award, Miss Chrissy Parrott, WA, for distinguished service to the performing arts, particularly to dance, as a performer, choreographer, and director, and through mentoring roles. And we won't go through all of your dance history just now, but you've danced everywhere.
Well,
nearly everywhere.
I started at a very tender young age in Britain. So I did a lot of ballet and theatrical dancing when I was younger. came to Australia, yes, at the tender age of 10 or 10 and a half, and continued my training with a very distinguished teacher, Kira Busloff, Madame Kira Busloff.
Who founded the WA Ballet.
She founded the WA Ballet. She was an ex-Ballet Russe ballet dancer.
Mm.
And she didn't go back to Russia when everybody else did. So she stayed in Australia and set up her school in Perth. My mother, when we were in Britain, my mother was asking, you know, where shall I take my daughter? And her name came up. So it took us a few years to find her, but we did eventually. And I became one of her students.
Mm.
So she trained me in the Russian style of ballet. But of course, Ballet Russe was a very theatrical company.
Ah.
It was not stage and lights. It was stage and drama and big costumes and, you know, it was the whole kit and caboodle.
So I think you're beginning to tell me that
yes,
had quite an effect on you, all of that background, that training,
well,
her outlook.
It did, but, you know, prior to that, when I was in Britain, my parents lovingly used to take me to any dance that I could possibly see. We lived in the northeast of England in an industrial town.
What town was that?
It's called Middlesbrough. And it's quite close to Newcastle and Sheffield and all of that, you know, the iron and steel works. But we were luckily quite close to the Pennine, was it Pennine chain? Anyway, Eston Hills. So we were kind of, yeah, in a good spot.
You could get out of the industrial setting.
So I was a bit of a star pupil and we used to go along to the dance comps, but they weren't like today, they were quite small, but they were in these beautiful old halls, lovely old ballrooms.
Mm.
You know, like one of the places that we went every or maybe twice a year was Blackpool Pier, and it's notorious for the vaudeville and all of that.
Mm.
And so it was me and my parents, my brother stayed at home. And so rather than leaving me in the hotel at night, they'd take me out to see all these incredible vaudeville shows.
Mm.
So, you know, from the age of 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, I was watching vaudeville and loving it. And some of it was a bit risque, I've got to say.
Yes.
But so that's really what has it been etched into my brain and my memory.
Well, Mrs. Worthington was given advice about a daughter and a stage, but what about your parents? Were they actively engaged in theatre or the arts in some way?
Well, no. They came from that sort of wartime family group, so no, they were. My mother, I think she wanted to be a dancer, but of course she was involved in all of that, especially in Britain.
But they loved the performing arts by the sound of it.
She did particularly.
She did particularly.
Dad always supported me. But she was the one that had the inkling for it. But I think I pestered her enough to take me along every time.
Now, I want to do something which quickly jumps
yes.
a few decades, not that
sure,
many.
Sure.
But in the mid-80s, you set up the Chrissy Parrott Dance Company.
Yes, that's right.
And when you did that, what were you wanting to achieve? What were your production values, if you like? What was your ambition?
Well, let me cut a long story short and yes. say that when I came to Australia, I spent those years with Kira. At the tender age of 15, as we did back there,
yes.
I left school and studied full-time ballet. I went to Melbourne and studied over there. Then I came back and joined the West Australian Ballet quite young. The ballet went into some financial disastrous moment.
Periodic.
And so, yes, so I went overseas and I stayed. I went overseas. I danced in Swan Lake. I did lots of big performances and travelled all through Europe. Came back briefly. I'm cutting it very short. Started to do some choreography here and I won an award to go and study choreography in Sydney. That school also went broke. So I joined a group in Sydney called the One Extra Dance Company and we all worked together, saved our money and went to London and I stayed overseas for 10 years. So during that time, until 1986, with some travels backwards and forwards, I worked in big companies in Europe, in Germany, and I'm talking 3,000 people at every performance. So I was suddenly thrown into this beautiful world of big productions. Went to Sweden, yes, very fast story here, went to Sweden, had my child, got married, had a child, and my husband, who now lives in Western Australia, Stefan Carlson, and I lived in Stockholm, and so don't anybody complain about the cold, lived in Stockholm, and then Chernobyl blew, which is what brought me back to Western Australia. Oh. So that's it in a nutshell. Lots of experience, lots of amazing choreographers, etc., etc., and performed in one of the oldest theatres in the world, in La Fenice in Venice. Came back and just started doing some projects. And within that time, there were some smaller companies around at that time, but I don't think they quite had the push and the passion and the ambition that Chrissy Parrott had at that time. My goodness.
Did you get resistance? Did people sort of look at you, not askance, but think, oh, well, how long will this last?
Probably behind the scenes, yes, but I was resilient to that because I had come back with a lot of confidence because I'd been immersed in this amazing situation. Mm. So I started making work, and at that time, the government were doing a research project because I guess they were looking to spend some funds on the arts, which was a nice time. And what do they call it? Like a review, an audience review. And my name kept coming up in these reviews.
Right.
So they approached me and said, let's formally put something together and we'll put that into the government, see what happens.
Right.
I had some...
They wanted to support a particular...
A contemporary dance company.
Company with money.
Now there wasn't a lot of money then it was for me it was more about you know the opportunity to make work. I didn't really worry about
yes.
the funding, so we were getting grants of $300
right
$600-$700 you know which was stretched a long way. So when I came to Australia back to Australia and I felt very European at that time,
yes,
I thought, you know, there seemed to be a gap here for that kind of work. Now, the West Australian Ballet, who I had been a part of for 7 years prior to me going
yes.
away, were very supportive, incredibly supportive.
Right.
I made work for them. They supported me. They gave me marketing and amazing. That was Barry Moreland was the director
yes.
at that stage.
Yes.
He was the most generous, incredible artistic director. Mm. So he supported it because he wanted contemporary dance, but his brief was to make more balletic work because he really, he came from the Martha Graham background.
Right.
So he gradually started to blend the work into the company. So I was very, very fortunate at that time.
You use an expression, make work. What does that mean in a
Well,
technical
it's
sense?
like writing a book. And I
Yes.
think often when you say choreography, people that aren't versed with what choreography is, it's like writing a musical score because
Yes.
you need to write the mathematical score of the steps, for example, and the architecture of the work.
Yes.
Then you're writing the story or rewriting a story. So you're authoring,
Yes.
you're scoring, and you're building. So we say make because
Yes.
otherwise we'd
Yes.
be, our sentences would be very long and descriptive. But yes, it's all of that.
What's the
Building.
first thing you made by way of work?
Oh, well, the first thing that I made that was sort of memorable, I suppose, besides, doing things when I was younger,
Yes.
was for the West Australian Ballet. And it was a choreographic competition.
Yes.
And it was at the Octagon Theatre.
I love the Octagon.
Oh, yeah, it was lovely. And it was a work, a deep and meaningful work called Like Hiroshima, Just Another Fallout.
Oh.
And that was because at that stage in Europe, they were talking about the fallout from nuclear, from the nuclear accidents and things like that.
Well, you had 3 Mile Island and then you had Chernobyl. You had a lot of fallout, didn't you?
Now, Chernobyl came later
It
than that,
came
though.
later than
So this
this.
was my
This was
first work.
before you
This
got
was many
Chernobyl
years
back
back.
here. Yes.
And I had this idea that I'd do Tai Chi because of the whole. And look, if you really kind of go back and do the research, I was sort of off the mark a little bit. But it was about the children and the adults that were wiped out, I guess.
Yep.
So it was a very thoughtful work. But what happened was I didn't win that competition. And I used this piece of music by Hans Werner Henze, who eventually became head of music at UWA. Hans Werner Henze lived in Cologne, which is where I worked later as well. It's all this
Right.
incredible circle. And it was a very contemporary piece of work. It was played on glass instruments by a Japanese contemporary artist. And I was told by the panel that they didn't understand the music, and consequently, they couldn't give me any kind of accolade for it. So it was kind of interesting that then I went on to work in Cologne, met Hans Werner Henze, and then he came back to UWA and started the contemporary music program over here. So it was sort of, I love life, the way it all connects up like that.
So that's the first.
Yes,
Now,
yes.
just a
Okay.
brief interlude here to ask
Yes.
about the glass music. I once attended a glass orchestra performance,
Yes.
people playing glasses with
Instruments.
heat and water and one of the most memorable
Yes,
things I
beautiful.
attended. But how was this music made?
Well, there were glass. He had glass percussion instruments, but he also had glass wind instruments. And he was a solo artist. His name, oh God, it's gone. I'll think about his name in a moment. But it was incredibly contemporary. There were lots of gaps and lots of tings and whistles and those sorts of lovely no noises.
Yes.
And we're talking back in the late 70s. So although it was big in Europe, it hadn't
It was
quite
still getting here.
emerged. I mean, there were people here, but they weren't going to the dance at that stage.
Now, when you started making work,
Yes. Building.
and it's always going to have dance involved in it, as well as whatever else is going on, what about the music? Is music the first thing you find?
It's interesting, I've been asked that many times.
Yes.
It's not always. Look, I pause because it's not an easy question to answer in the sense that, what inspires my work. Sometimes I will see an image and I'm a thinker. I think a lot. Rather than a writer in that sense. And so I'll start thinking about immigration, I'll start thinking about waste, I'll start thinking about consumerism, for example, just looking at that. And that would be the inspiration for a work, for example, or a beautiful image, or some stunning music, or just sitting on the beach, my imagination has a little light bulb moment. So it changes a lot. But mostly, I'd say the works that have been most successful and people have been attracted to are the more theatrical works. But underneath all of that, I always have something that might trigger thought process for people as well. So they have an opportunity to be entertained, and if they get past that point, they've also got the other.
Something to think about as they walk home.
Something to maybe change them a little bit.
Yes.
And if some people love that, some people like to go for the entertainment, for the poetry of it. So I don't try to, but I find the layering is really important for audiences.
Now, I want to bring us quickly to the present, but then go back about 25 years again, more or less to where we were. There's another production happening soon here in Fremantle at the old Moores Building,
Beautiful building.
isn't it? It's
Oh,
been brought back
stunning.
beautifully, and this production is going to be called Facade, is that right?
Correct.
And the notes I have in front of me ask more questions than they provide answers, but it says a brutal Baroque performance event, large-scale installation, dance, opera, and robotic ballerina. So, as I say, more questions are asked, and this is happening between the 10th and 20th of September coming up. But Chrissy, this in a sense dates back or is drawn out of something that happened in 1986.
1986 was when I came back from
Yes.
Europe. It was around about
Fleeing
Chernobyl.
Chernobyl.
Yes, or Chernobyl.
Chernobyl.
Yes, so I'd come back, and in those days, the Perth Festival had the Perth Fringe Festival.
Yes.
And Ian Lilburn and Barry Strickland, my incredible mentors and friends, were the directors of that festival. I can't remember exactly how we met, but we did. And they offered me the opportunity to do some work. So I applied for funding and I got $300 and put on seven works.
Seven.
Seven. And they were called earthworks because every single one of them were in situ. One was on the beach, at Cottesloe, and I had 35 dancers down there. One was in King Square, which is now being renamed, I believe.
Yes, Wallulup Court.
Wardjalup Court, one was there. That was called Cathedral. One was in the street and other places, and one in particular was inside the Moores Building. Now, the Moores Building had been closed for a long time, and I have photographs from that particular period where they were still making it public friendly. And as I walked in, this piece of plaster literally fell off the wall onto the floor. And I thought that's where my idea came from. I thought I'm going to do a work about the facades that we carry around, about how we often, we being public, the world, how we often try to sort of plaster things up. We cover things up. We
Do you mean individually, or do you mean as a broader community?
globally. I'm talking globally. I mean, we cover up our indigenous problems. We cover up all of the racist problems. We cover up our untidy selves. We cover up our very untidy interiors often. So there's a lot of it. We are just a facade that we carry around. And sometimes people drop their facade. Some people tend to hold it very tightly. So I plastered my dancers up with plaster. And put them into huge crinolines, plastic, recycled plastic crinolines, and very big powdered wigs. And without giving the secret away, during the process of the event, everything falls off. Everything. It's like a puppeteering of the costumes. By the end of it, they're these little tiny insipid creatures that crawl underneath the crinolines and become like little crustaceans and crawl off stage. And it's very
So,
funny.
very, very
It's
funny.
hysterical. People laugh, but they're
But
trying to get it, you know.
they kind of get it.
Yes.
That there are, yes,
Under the doona,
we weak, pathetic humans are underneath all of this.
Well, or not all of us, but
Not
you
all
know,
of us.
I think there's an inkling with everybody where we want to sometimes hide away or But particularly in the entertainment industry, you know, there's a lot of it, and I've lived it my life. I've been in it for nearly 50 years now, and it's a part of my life, so I see it a lot.
That was 1986. You've just come back from Chernobyl
Yep, from Sweden.
and Sweden and
Stockholm
Stockholm,
and
lovely place.
London.
And here we are, another port city.
Yes.
And now here we come along 35 years later. Can you
My
believe it?
God.
And you are doing something that I just read out, still carrying the label facade with all of those insides. But what's going to happen? Is this just a rerun?
No. One step back, my manager, when my company finally got funded and we became a company, my manager, Drew James, lives in New Zealand. He called me before COVID had even emerged into the world. He called me and he said, "I want to do Facade in Wellington at our festival."
What was his connection with Facade?
He was the manager of my company later, and we had remade it a number of times
Right.
in different guises.
Yes.
It was never done in the Moores Building again, but we did it sometimes as street theatre, very appropriate for street theatre
Yes.
or festivals.
Yes.
It's a festival
No, I
piece.
get it. Yeah.
So he said, "Let's do it." And then I was going to say Chernobyl, and then the virus
COVID.
took over, and we put it in a little drawer and put some cotton wool about around it. But then I moved to Nanup, to the southwest, thinking that it was time for me to, you know, hang up my shoes and do all that, burn my tutu. But no, I couldn't possibly do that. So I
I think it would
applied.
be the impossible, Chrissy, for you to do that.
Well, I'll have to
Close
do it.
to.
I'll have to do it at some point. But so I thought, well, anyway. So I got some dancers together, two of them who were in the original production, and we remembered it.
Wonderful.
We remembered it. We rebuilt the costumes, which
Wow.
are huge. And I thought, okay, we'll do it again. And then I thought, we can't just do that because it's not long enough. I
So,
have to build something around it.
when the idea gets floated and you're attracted to it, you think you'll probably have to do some long drives up from Nanup to make this all happen. But was there an idea as to where it should be produced this time? Was it always going to be back in Fremantle?
I wanted to do it at the Moores Building again.
Once again.
And interestingly, most of the people that are now involved in managing those buildings weren't around at that stage.
Yes.
There's one particular person that was, who I'm very happy to say saw it. Most of those people. So for me, it's such an important bit of history
Yes.
because it was the Moores Building before it was renovated. It was part of that Fringe Festival. It was one of the first works I did when I came. Well, it was the first work
Yes.
when I came back from Europe. So for me, it's huge history.
Well, it's very heartwarming, this
Yeah.
story, really.
Yeah.
So, as I say, 35 years after that homecoming, this is being reproduced.
That's right.
And I gather, in a sense, it's reimagined. It's not
It's
just what
reimagined.
happened before.
The word I'm using is it's sort of been exploded, but not quite. I mean, you know,
Yes.
the crinolines are now bigger. The piece itself is longer. I've got two more dancers. They're young. I've got actually four generations of dancers, which I'm really happy about as well. So, and it's changed a bit. It's changed because we all change. I mean,
It
the
has to
architecture,
change, doesn't it?
yes, the architecture, the scoring is there as the base, but I've built on that. I've extended it a little bit. Made it funnier. I can't help it. Because one of the things I haven't said way back in the day was my father was a stand-up comedian,
Oh.
and he's now gone to, you know,
So
the theatre in the sky.
you did have these
Oh, yes.
connections with the
I
stage.
did, and he never became a professional, but he was a performer. He performed all over the place, but he never took it on as a
No.
profession. He was the funniest man.
Yes.
He was a cockney. Yes,
Right.
my mother was from the north of England. He was from London. So as soon as he opened his mouth, people thought he was telling a joke because because of his accent. And of course, back in the day, there were a lot of comedians at that.
Yes.
You know, British comedians.
So humour, in a sense, is in your life from the beginning, and you still can see the funny side of things.
I do.
How many people are going to be seen in this production, in the stage settings?
All right. So there are four people in that particular work, but I also have an opera singer who is a stand-up comedian as well. He is my master of ceremonies.
Yes.
And he'll be dressed in a Baroque outfit with the long curls and everything.
And we should give him a name.
His name is...
Paul Rowe.
Paul Rowe is the most amazing man who hasn't... I don't know why he's not ultimately the most famous comedian in Western Australia, but maybe he will be after this. He is fantastic. He's master of ceremonies. He can move, he can sing, he's a natural.
Yes.
Tall, lanky, gorgeous-looking bloke who will fit in that Baroque costume very well with the ringlets sort of on his face, you know, that look.
Yes.
The sort of daggy ringlets.
Yeah.
Anyway, then I have a brand new addition, Ellis Pearson. Do you know Ellis?
No.
Oh, it looked like you might.
No.
He studied at the Lecoq School in France, and he's a small person with a very interesting look, who I met at a recent gathering of artists in Subiaco. He makes his own instruments, and he's going to play some very interesting music, which might not be Baroque, but it'll definitely be brutal. So
apart from that music,
what
other music is there?
A lot of Baroque.
Yes.
Some of it refashioned.
Yep.
It's become a vaudeville Baroque concert,
right,
in the end.
Yes.
So there are 7 or 8 or maybe 10 small vignettes, each one self-encompassing.
Yes.
And they're literally, Paul will come on and introduce it, and the next thing will happen.
Right.
So it goes then right back to my Blackpool days.
Okay.
These shows that
right.
happened.
So you're entertaining the masses.
Completely.
And the answer then to this question, is it something you shouldn't take grandmother to, but you should take your grandchildren to? Is the answer
definitely.
You take everybody?
Take everybody.
Take everybody.
Everybody will love it. There are two dancers who are both very beautiful ballet dancers who I'm working with this week, in fact. We're doing authentic Baroque dance.
Yep.
So it's pure Baroque. There's nothing, there's no comedy. There's
yep.
absolutely no comedy in it. It is pure Baroque. And it's going to be absolutely stunning. So they'll be there as well. Then I've got an actor, Bruce Denny. Now, Bruce works with Yuriyarkin and those companies. He's an Indigenous actor, very tall, very intriguing looking man, who is what I call the provocateur in the work. And for me, that's a little bit of it's a weave through the whole evening.
Mm.
And it talks a little bit about facade as well, the fact that we have covered things up.
Mm.
But he's a very confident kind of out there character. So I don't want to say any more about that yet. Because when you're a provocateur, you wait till the last minute before you come into the show.
Have your provocateur stuff dry, don't you, to
yes.
explode. Now,
and opera.
And opera.
And opera.
So you've got something for everybody, in a sense.
Well, these performers can do everything.
Yes. Is there anything you've done before that's like this? I mean, it's because you're involved in it, it's the answer to that's yes. But is there anything that you've done that's quite like this?
I've done one other show very early on in the piece at the Victoria Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. That had been closed for many years.
Mm.
And once it was reopened, I put a show on called Galah at the Vic.
Yes.
And that was similar. It was similar, but I certainly didn't have the experience then to do it the way I'm doing it. One of the main features of this particular production is the proscenium arch that I'm building.
Aha. Now, I saw a reference to that when you say you're building. I get the impression this is...
It's a theatre.
This is big. This is a theatre.
It's a theatre.
You've got some cutouts here.
Well, the whole thing... earlier on, I was talking about the oldest theatre in Europe that I performed in.
Yes.
So the main feature of those theatres was often the facade at the front. Now, this is a facade, because in the older theatres, backstage, it was, you know, wood and ropes and things like that.
Yes.
So to dress it up, again, with this whole concept of facade, yes, they would build this magnificent archway.
Well, this was going to the theatre. You knew you would arrive somewhere special.
That's right. And then, you know, yeah. So I am building, in the Moores building, I'm building a proscenium arch.
A bit like this?
Proscenium, before the scene.
Yes.
Yes, and it is Baroque.
Right.
But it'll be a bit broken because I haven't started building it yet, so I'm not sure exactly how it will look in the end, but I certainly have a vision of what it will look like. I have the curtains. I have velvet curtains. I have lots of gilt pieces. I'm guilty. Oh, that's a good one. I have to remember that. So I am building that with a set maker who has her studios down here, Janet Carter, and an artist, Deborah McKendrick,
yep,
fashion designer and artist, Deborah McKendrick, and also Chris Edmond,
right,
who's an actor. So we're, yes, building that,
yes,
before we start the choreography.
Yes.
And then we're dancing inside it.
Now, there seems to be something else happening upstairs.
Gosh,
is there?
Yes.
And this is the bit.
It's huge, isn't it?
I like, thought I'd just about got it, and then I saw Jeffrey Drake Brockman's name.
Yeah.
So what's going on? What's happening?
Jeffrey and I have had this association artistically for nearly a decade, I guess.
Yep.
He makes robotic work. I have worked with robotics. It's another string in my bow, which we won't go into now, but I've worked in Paris and different places in motion capture studios because I'm fascinated with the tethered body as well as the untethered body. So he and I have been talking about projects. Meanwhile, he, as a visual artist, has made some incredible pieces that are robotic. You probably know about his work. And it's performed all over the world, not necessarily with the human form, and interactive. So people walk past and the artwork responds and then it closes down, etc. And because of the facade, and I knew that he had been working on this robotic concept, I went to see him and we talked about it. And he said, great, okay, I need an outing for my ballerina. Let's do some choreography and dance with my robotic ballerina. And I said, okay. So we are yet to create that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's all going to happen very quickly. So two of my dancers will be upstairs in his simulacra lounge. Now, simulacra is a word from ancient Greece, where they made effigies of people. Now, they weren't robotic, but it's simulacra, is the simulation of the body. So he has worked a lot with bodies moving, not moving, etc., body molds. And he's molded a ballerina, life-size ballerina, and she moves. She has ballet moves, upper body, beautiful, absolutely, like an automata.
So how do you, as a member of the audience, entering that wonderful entrance, one or other, at the Moores building, then enjoy all of this, partake in it all?
Well, it's a performance, so you again, we're still building around this, so
yes,
this is still conceptual. They'll come in, they'll look at my artworks on the wall, which we'll talk about. Then they come through into the auditorium and watch the,
yes,
first part of the show. Then they'll be invited in small groups to go upstairs.
Yes.
Those that don't go up, that can't go up, that, yes, won't go up, will be entertained in other ways, downstairs.
Mm.
Have a glass of bubbles, maybe. then everybody comes and sits down and we watch the second half of the,
right,
program. Mm. So it's sort of the entr'acte. used to be called an entr'acte, in between shows, while scenes were changed, they'd have something happening in front of the curtain.
So it's a very full event.
Oh,
There's something
I
happening.
don't
And you
know.
mentioned the artwork when you come in. So I see something here, and the listeners can become viewers, and they'll see, well, what is this?
This is a very large scale artwork, and that is a dancer who I made a film with. And I took a lot of stills while we were making the film. And the still, well, that film is basically just head, shoulders, and the wig, and it's the same concept of the face falling off. So it was facade, but without the dance. So rather than letting it sit on the shelf, I made use of those frames, and I've made frames as in stills of the film, and I've made some large scale portraits. But again, because I find it hard to stop, I also have portraits of other dancers, and I will be taking some this week, that are slightly disheveled, I'd say. So you see the beauty, but you see the other.
Well, it's becoming more enticing all the time, Chrissy. But it sounds to me as
I don't know if people will, how people will respond, but that's what it's all about,
well, there's not going to be an unoccupied, unadorned, inactive part of the Moores building by the sound of it in this
No.
performance.
The Moores building will be full.
And how many are able to fit in for these performances?
Well, I'm working on 100 people per performance.
Yes.
Our opening night is almost sold out.
Yes.
Our closing night is filling up, but through the week we need people to come
Yes.
to come and have a look.
Yes.
And I've taken the chance of performing every night. So we do
Yes.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and they're
I just think that's so
historically slow
exciting.
days.
Yeah, I mean, so many
Yes.
things happen generally in this state. Probably it's partly the COVID times, but the idea that you can't perform as if on Broadway or the West End or some other great part of the world where people perform nightly.
I
You can
know,
do it.
I
Ten
know.
days?
There are eight
Eight
performances. The
performances.
first two nights are the exhibition,
Yes.
and the installation. And the 12th is the first performance, the
Yes.
12th. So 10th and 11th are viewing
Yes.
of the artworks. And the installation itself will be, hopefully,
When it's finished.
magnificent. And
Well,
enough for sore eyes, you know what I mean? We're like, whoa, that's before the performers move in. So.
we've done this in various ways, but to bring our discussion to a close now, how would you simply describe this? What people are going
Well,
to
I think
partake
the
of?
word vaudeville definitely has to be in there. And the word, I mean, the brutal can scare people, so it's not devastatingly brutal. It's just the idea of breaking things a little bit.
Yes.
You know, you make it, you break it, you pay for it. So it's vaudeville, it's pure dance, you know, opera, ballet, huge installation, artworks, robotics. I don't think there's one string of words that makes it. It's more like, you know, dash slash words. So they're all the things we're talking about. We're talking about it's entertainment, it's pure entertainment. Like I said, the layers are always there when I make work, but some people get it at that level, some people don't. And whichever level you are used to when you go to the theatre, whether you want the deep and the meaningful and the political, it will be there. If you want to come for pure entertainment, it's absolutely there.
Well, Chrissy, it's been lovely talking to you
Oh.
about it. This sounds to me the summation of all your experience. You look quite relaxed, even
I'm
though there are
so
things.
excited, you wouldn't believe it anyway.
Well, and this thing sounds, I have to say, so Fremantle.
Oh my God. Oh
People will
yeah,
be
does it?
coming from everywhere, and they need to get
I
their
hope
tickets
so.
quickly.
Yes,
Less than a
yes.
thousand people can get to the eight performances, so they need to buy their tickets immediately. Well, the very best of luck,
Thank you
and as
so
they say
much.
in the fine tradition, break a leg.
Well, I hope you come along.
Well, I'll be there for sure. Thanks, Chrissy.